Hello and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm Barry Hennessy. Sean Delaney is off this week. Coming up on this week's programme, Commissioner Ollie Rain calls on Ireland to protect education in hard times. So just what are the lessons from his native Finland? We'll hear from the Finnish government's chief economic advisor. Don't forget, if you have any comments or suggestions for the programme, you can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. If you've missed a programme and you'd like to catch up, you'll find our entire programme archive on our website, insideed.com. You can also catch our weekly podcast on iTunes. First this week, we'll start with our usual look at news from the world of education. And the broad lines of the education budget for 2011 would appear to have become a little clearer this week, thanks to an extended analysis of the situation that appeared on the website of the Green Party's education spokesman, Paul Gogarty. As you'll probably be aware, Deputy Gogarty has been prominent over the past couple of weeks in his defence of the education commitments in the revised programme for government, and there's a widespread view that his latest update provides a reliable picture of the decisions to come. In his message, Paul Gogarty reminds readers of the range of concessions that the Green Party secured last year, including additional teachers, static capitation fees and no third level fees. He then goes on to add that he recognises the difficulty of holding on to a budget comprised mainly of salaries that requires an additional €240 million just to stand still. Then come the key sentences. Difficult as it may be, as negotiations proceed, we've had to concede in a number of areas. There will be cuts and additional charges within the education budget. However, Gogarty goes on to reiterate his opposition to increasing the pupil-teacher ratio, describing its retention as a no-brainer. He does, however, indicate that there'll be some reduction in capitation grants to schools, but that their value will remain the same in real terms, an indication almost certainly of a decrease in line with reduced costs in the economy. Similarly, Paul Gogarty indicates that there'll be a reduction in the capital budget to reflect the fall in tender prices. As you'll know, there's been much discussion recently regarding the failure of the Department of Education to spend all the capital budget available to it. On the third level registration fees issue, Paul Gogarty says that he regards €2,000 per year as a realistic figure, so it now seems almost certain that this will be the amount announced in the budget. So what are we to make of this rather long, you might even say soul-searching piece on Paul Gogarty's website? Well, we've tried to ask the man himself, but not for the first time he's failed to return our call. We should probably focus on what's not in it. There's no commitment to employ a specific number of additional teachers to alleviate demographic pressures. There's nothing about grants for transition year, physics, chemistry, Leaving Cert vocational programme or Leaving Cert applied. There is talk about increased charges, but no specific mention of school transport. It's hard to see how that could possibly escape. We can safely assume that the baseline pupil-teacher ratio is probably out of danger at this time, but it remains to be seen whether the truth for school staffing lies in what Paul Gogarty neglected to say. But since he won't tell us, we can't tell you just yet. Just a final word on this, though. Latest reports on the education budget suggest a decrease of approximately €230 million on last year. Next to the Croke Park Agreement, and there's been a raft of new reports this week on the implementation measures across the public service. In education, it now seems likely that a new protocol on school closures will come into effect as early as January, the implication of which would be to put an end to schools closing for half days to facilitate staff meetings or training. The additional hour in the teacher's working week is expected to be used for this purpose. It's also reported that the Department of Education will issue a circular shortly on a more flexible deployment of special needs assistants, including the requirement that they work a minimum of 32 hours each week. Finally, this week, the Irish National Teachers Organisation will be hosting its 25th annual consultative conference on education in Cork next weekend. The theme of this year's conference is Learning Communities. Professor Mark Morgan will deliver the keynote address on the topic of overcoming adversity, resilience in teachers' lives. Professor Morgan works at St Patrick's College in Drumcondra. The conference will also hear from school-based practitioners experienced in organising learning communities, as well as hearing the results of focus groups conducted by the INTO's education during the year. So we'll hopefully have some more on that for you next week. But for now, that is the education news. And you're tuned to Inside Education here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Barry Hennessy. If you have any comments on what you're hearing tonight, you can email us here at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. The European Commissioner for Economic Affairs, Ollie Rain, has publicly called on Ireland to safeguard its education system in the difficult budgetary decisions to be made in the years ahead. Commissioner Raine's defence of education spending is not only encouraging to all who care about education in Ireland, it's also surely the voice of experience. Olli Rehn is from Finland, a country that experienced its own major financial crisis about 20 years ago. The Finns saw education, research and innovation as key to their own economic renewal and prosperity, and largely protected education from the severe cuts to public spending necessary to get out of their own crisis. Dr. Jukka Pekkarinen is Acting Secretary General of the Economic Council of Finland, a secondment from his full-time position as head of the Economics Department within the Finnish Finance Ministry. He's an active interest in education and innovation and recently addressed a Dublin conference on overcoming recession through innovation that featured many expert speakers from both Ireland and Finland, and indeed was attended by both the Taoiseach and the Finnish Prime Minister. Well, I spoke to Dr. Jukka Pekkarinen about the success of the Finnish education system over the past 20 years. But he began by looking at the crisis that Finland faced in the early 1990s when a banking crisis coincided with the loss of Finland's main trading partner, the former USSR.
Yes, sure. And there was a total collapse of the economy, which is really comparable to the collapse of the Irish economy, so that we had an unemployment rate of 17% at the peak.
Okay, let's just discuss, I suppose, the Finnish education system historically. Prior to the crisis of the early 1990s, what was the position of the Finnish education system in terms of its funding and in terms of its outcomes measured, let's say, relative to similar countries?
I think there are some joint characteristics to the Irish history in the sense that early on we had invested a lot in the basic education system, so that by 1990s our basic education, so the primary education, was at a good level. And then what happened in the 1990s onwards was the investment on the higher education and the innovation system, research and development system.
There is something of a view in this country that Finland simply chose to continue investing large amounts of money in education during the crisis. But the reality is a little bit different. There were, in fact, cuts in real terms to your education budget, were there not?
Yes, but there was this change in the structure of the educational budget. And then there was, of course also a sharp increase in the R&D activities of the private sector, which reflected the structural change in the economy. Of course, this is part of the Nokia phenomenon, so to say. So that there was an increase in at the higher edge of the public funding and then this inflow of private money also.
We're going to discuss all of that, but I think the significant issue is that whilst there was a cut in real terms, the actual spend relative to GDP in education increased in the early 1990s, as I understand it.
And if you take into account that there was a fall in the amount of public sector all taken together, so that the share of the expenditure on education in the use of public money was sharply increasing.
There is, if you like, the debate in Ireland at the moment, I mean, the debate in Ireland at the moment is largely centred on, I suppose, the inputs into the education system and, you know, speculation about, you know, will numbers of teachers be cut? Will schools be closed? And I understand that, in fact, in Finland, decisions were made to close some of the smaller schools. And there were, in fact, during the worst of the crisis, there were, in fact, some cuts to the numbers of teachers employed. Is that correct?
That's correct. But you have to notice that we have a kind of a dual education system, which is quite common in Europe, so that the basic education up to the secondary level is in the hands of the local municipalities, local government municipalities. And many of the municipalities got into deep financial troubles and they had to cut somewhat and make more effective and cut the number of the teachers in basic education, whereas the government, central government, was investing in higher education system.
Talk to me a little bit about what you discussed a moment ago, which was the change in the structure of the education system. I'd like to just get a proper understanding of what you mean when you talk about structural change.
I mean the structural change as a result of which the share of higher education and the research, higher research of the total education budget was increasing.
You talk about the role of private industry, and of course, as you mentioned, it's the Nokia phenomenon, which I understand it represents a quarter and even more than a quarter sometimes of the total R&D. Are we looking therefore at a very close linkage between the private sector and the and university research departments? Is there significant?
Yes. Yes. That was actually also kind of a new feature in our innovation system, that the close cooperation between the private companies, corporate sector, and universities, it actually started at that time. We had a good example of that in one of the universities in the northern Finland, Oulu, where actually I originally come from, where really there was a new university with a technical faculty, and just an example, they started a joint many joint initiatives with the private sector. And then Nokia actually shifted a lot of its activities to this particular city, so that there are good examples of that kind of fruitful cooperation.
In terms of research and development policies, in terms of the academic priorities for institutions, when you have such a degree of cooperation, and obviously in Ireland at the moment there is talk of significant reform coming down the lines, where there will be perhaps some form of more centralised determination of what the priorities should be. Did academic freedom suffer at all when you had enhanced cooperation between the private sector and the individual universities?
Of course, there was discussion on that, but I think not really. And afterwards, there has actually been no criticism on such criticism. And I think part of the explanation for the fact that the cooperation was quite natural to begin with, really, is that in Finland we have a long tradition going back to the 19th century in having a rather strong technical faculties and rather extensive system of technical education, and most of this cooperation really took place with the technical faculties and corporations in engineering.
Do you have institutions that are specifically designated as technical universities?
Yeah, we have.
Let's talk a little bit more, I suppose, about getting more for less, because this is an expression that I've seen in some of the literature. Obviously, when you had a cut in real terms in the budget going into education, even if it was holding up in terms of GDP. How can you account for the fact that in all major surveys to do with literacy and numeracy, Finland appears to be coming out on top, even though you don't have the world's highest spend in education?
Yeah, that's interesting. And interesting also is that it's not that easy to explain. I haven't seen any proper study, so any comprehensive study which would come to a kind of a full explanation. But I think, because this high quality basically concerns the basic education, primary education, I think one important aspect behind this achievement is the high quality of teacher education. So teachers are educated in universities, so that they have a university degree, even the primary teachers in the primary schools. And then I think they are highly appreciated. Teachers are highly appreciated in the Finnish society. So that actually they are paid lower salaries, but so that socially they are highly appreciated in the community. So that it's really a kind of a very popular occupation, profession in Finland.
I might just diverge a little bit into mathematics, because this is one of the big issues of concern in Ireland in recent times, is low attainment in mathematics. And I imagine if you want to achieve a critical mass as a research and development, as an innovation economy, you need a good level of mathematical attainment. What about the mathematical standards of Finnish teachers? I mean, do you have defined minimum standards for trainee teachers in mathematics?
And because that's part of their university education, so that they have to study some mathematics also. And we have a long tradition of this discussion of the relative weight of, say, languages, humanities on the one hand, and mathematics on the other, because we have a rather heavy load of foreign languages. in the schools because we have two official languages, and then our own language, Finnish, is a very exotic language. But as a result, seems to be that actually the impact on the level of mathematics there has been no negative impact, because in the PISA studies, for instance, Finland comes at the top also in mathematics. So that also must come, I think, very much back to the quality of the teaching.
Yes, because I mean, this is an issue that's constantly being discussed in this country. The view, if you like, that many young people have a fairly negative disposition towards mathematics. Do you know anything about the actual syllabus in mathematics in Finland? Is it a fairly theoretical syllabus, or is it more practically focused?
I don't know that much, but yes. Something what I know is that in Finland we put a lot of emphasis on problem solving, so that they are teaching of mathematics is quite tactical in the starting point, so that students are solving problems using mathematics, so that it's not that kind of a heavy loaded analytical teaching, so that it's practically oriented, particularly at the lower level.
But I understand that you know, the problem solving approach, not just, I mean, it permeates right across the curriculum, as I understand it, and in fact it's one of the reforms that has been practiced in Finland over the last 20 years. Autonomy for teaching and a lot of flexibility in the use of materials and textbooks.
That's true, and that has had impact particularly in mathematics, I would say.
Right. I understand that you don't actually have much external inspection of the work of schools.
Actually, we used to have
a
fairly centralized system, but you are right that it has been moved to a more decentralized direction. But we have national exams, so that we have a national... after high school, we have a national examination where all the students pass the same test, and then we have national tests at the lower level also, but the results of these tests are not published, so that we are not ranking the elementary schools publicly, but they are testing, and there is some positive discrimination, particularly in the larger cities, that those schools which are in the deprivated areas, they get more resources on the basis of these tests.
Is there a significant role at all in Finland in terms of private schools, fee-paying schools?
No, practically only a few fee-paying schools. Actually, they are very few. Even compared to Sweden, we are very no religious schools. So that some schools which are more... which have a kind of a special curriculum, so that their teaching methods are different also, like Steiner schools and... If you know the system of Steiner schools and pestalozzi pedagogy and so on.
Dr. Pekkarinen, I want to get back to your main calling in life, which I know is as an economist, albeit you've taken a long running interest in all of these matters. But in Ireland at the moment, about 75% of the entire education budget is spent on the salaries and the pensions of education personnel. Have you any idea roughly what the figure would be in Finland?
I think these figures are very much the same. Not much difference. So that basically education is human interaction, so that it's a salary.
Okay.
But it's, of course, this ratio is different, of course, in the technical, at a higher level of technical education and medicine. But otherwise, I think the ratios are very much the same.
What about the question of pupil-teacher ratios? Because this, again, is one of the policy discussions going on here at the moment. The average mainstream classroom in a Finnish primary school, for example, what would the ratio be of pupils to the teacher?
20 and 30 per teacher. So that we are very close to the average in the European OECD countries. And our expenditure... a student is not that high, because as I told you already, the salary of the teachers is relatively low.
The salary of the teachers is relatively low?
Yes.
In Ireland,
most of the teachers are female. That's part of the explanation of low salaries.
Right. Are there difficulties attracting male teachers? No, no.
No, because it's a very, very popular profession, particularly among the female students.
Right. I mean, I'm just going to speculate here that in Ireland, let's just say a teacher with maybe 10 years experience in this country is probably earning a gross salary before tax in the order maybe of €4,300 per month. Could you...
That's more than here.
Significantly?
Significantly, I would say. So that, at what level is she or he teaching, you mentioned?
It would be either level, in fact, because we have a common scale for both primary and post-primary.
Okay. So I would say here it's around 3,000, between 3,000 and 4,000. But that's my guess, so that I don't know the exact figures.
Okay.
And our taxes are also higher. You have to, it was a gross salary.
Can we look a little bit more, because I know you have a particular interest in higher education and in innovation, and indeed you were speaking in Dublin only a few weeks ago on this area. With regard to undergraduate students in Finnish universities, let's say a person goes in to study something in the humanities, a major concern in this country is that students in those fields come out with very poor entrepreneurial skills, very poor labour market skills. What approach is taken in Finland in terms of ensuring that graduates are easily employable?
Okay, that's an interesting issue. First, at the level of higher education, third level education, all the students, before going to labour market, they pass the master's degree, so that the bachelor degree is not proper labour market examination here. And then I think you have to look, then there's one special characteristic which is common to Nordic countries is that there's a lot of overlapping between studying and work. So most of the students, they start working while they are still studying. And I think this, in a way, it prolongs the study time, but at the same time, I think it's useful for finding a job because the students are working on the area where they are studying. So that actually academic unemployment for graduates is rather low, relatively low internationally compared.
I know, for example, in Germany, it's been a tradition for many years for pupils to adopt a very flexible approach to their studies, taking semesters off to do work experience and such like. Yeah, is that a common practice too in the Finnish system?
Yes, there are some common characteristics. Also, although we don't have this German system of study on the workplace, where studying and working is formally integrated, that's a kind of a new system we are adopting from Germany. But so that there's here it has been the system that students divide their time, so that in summertime they are working and also their week. During semester, so that they spend afternoon in the work, so the part-time work is quite common.
And within the undergraduate studies, for example, do students take modules from areas, say, in business or entrepreneurship or anything, in such a way as students from right across the range of disciplines taught would be reasonably attuned to the needs of business?
Yeah, that's a new. That there has been some improvement on that, so that emphasis has been paid on the lack of that kind of a general introduction. And now I think it's common, so that there's a kind of a very general introduction, but that's for everybody in the school.
So just, I suppose, by way of moving towards a conclusion, and I'm very appreciative of your time, is there a Finnish secret? I mean, if I were to ask it to you in very stark terms.
Of course, that's a very difficult question.
Yes, I realise.
I think if there is a secret, my speculation would be that it's very much in the culture. Actually, it was interesting to notice that Estonia, you know, the former Soviet Republic, when it became independent, it's very close to Finland in language and in culture. And now it seems to be the case that in Estonia they have a perfect education system than private education. It's newly created, and certainly in Soviet times it was in bad shape, but really there must be something in this Nordic culture.
Mm.
And that's really the status of, I think, education, and as I mentioned already, the social status of teachers and so on.
And that was Dr. Jukka Pekkarinen there. He's Secretary General of the Economic Council of Finland. And doubtless over the next few years, as public policy looks, I suppose, at how to get more for less as we await the details of the four-year plan and, of course, the budget, there will probably be quite a lot of attention being paid to those countries which are at the top of the international education league tables, possibly through lower actual amounts of education spending than we have here in Ireland. And doubtless the question being asked is to how we can get the best outcomes from our education system without necessarily putting in the highest amount of money. Well, that was Dr. Jukka Pekkarinen, as I say, Secretary General of the Economic Council of Finland. And that is all we have time for on this week's Inside Education here on Dublin City FM. Don't forget you can listen back to the programme on our website, which is insideed.com. That's also the place you'll find our entire programme archive, as well as useful links and references for all the top topics we've covered. You can also catch our weekly podcast on iTunes. Until next week at 7:30 on Sunday and 3:30 on Monday, this is Barry Hennessy saying thank you for listening and goodbye. Thank you.